So today we are talking about the second coming of Christ, the blessed hope. Have you ever waited for someone to come to your house, or somebody who means a lot to you? And I have a friend who visits me every 2 years, and she always comes around August. So 1 year she comes, 1 year she doesn't. And after she leaves, I think, well, it'll be a long time until I see her again. It'll be 2 years. But then, time goes. And then, there's 1 year left, and then there's 6 months left, and then finally, the time comes, and then she's there. And then, all the waiting, of course, is sort of forgotten because the person that you've been waiting for has come. The same it will be with Christ coming, except it will be on a much larger and a much more glorious scale than anybody who may come to visit you or anything you may look forward to. So Jesus, of course, we are Christmas is around the corner. Jesus came to this earth the first time. That was the sort of one of the defining moments of history, right? In fact, the way we calculate time today is based on when Jesus was born, approximately. So we are way of reckoning time. So we're in year 2016. It's supposed to be 2016 years after Jesus' first birth, even though it's actually a bit more. But we count time from Jesus' first coming. Well, the second coming will be the climax of the history of the world. It's everything that we've been waiting for. Let's open our Bibles, and there are three sort of big questions about Jesus' coming. One is, why is he coming? And one is, when is he coming and how? Right? So three questions. Why, when, and how? Okay, so the first question, why? Right? We are here on this earth. And some people think, well, we are doing pretty well here. Why do we need Jesus to come? What is the point of it? So let's read our first text, which is John 14, verse 1 to 3. John 14, verse 1 to 3. Okay, who has it?
Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would not have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again. I will receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may also be.
Right. So here Jesus is close to the end of his mission on earth, and he has his disciples, right? They spent 3.5 years together, and he's telling them that he will have to go. So they're very sad. And he said, don't be sad, let not your heart be troubled. I'm giving you a promise. I'm giving you a promise that I'm going to come back for you. And let me share a little story with you. Which I have shared before. There was a crew in the 1900s, around 1914 to be precise, that went to the Antarctic. And the goal of their expedition was to cross the Antarctic from one side to the other, which had never been done before. And this expedition was conducted by a man called Ernest Shackleton. He was a famous explorer. And he was also a very good leader. And yeah, one of the reasons why he was such a good leader is because he thought that he should lead by example. So if he wanted his men to work, he worked with them. And, you know, whatever, you know, the privileges the officers had, so did all the other sailors. And so off they went to the Antarctic. And they were, they set anchor there. But the trouble was that the winter came much sooner than expected, and it was also a very hard winter. So what happens is that they got frozen, you know, the sea froze, and you know they were trying to get through, but of course it was frozen. You can't sail on a frozen sea. So they were still very far from land. So in the end, their boat, their ship, got crushed by the ice, like a walnut, you know. And so they had to abandon the ship. So now they're on foot, right? They're on foot, and they had to, it became a rescue mission now. They, you know, they abandoned their plan to cross the Antarctic. So they just had to save themselves. So through many hardships, you know, pulling these sledges with all their, you know, equipment and what they needed, they had to, of course, get rid of everything that they couldn't carry with them. They finally were able to reach you know, the sea where, you know, you could put the boats, and they had to carry their boats as well. They had three boats, and they had to carry them over the ice. So finally they got to this to sea. They all got into the boats, and by some miracle, you know, after sailing, I don't know, a few days, they actually hit land. But it was a deserted island. It was called Elephant Island. And, you know, they just found a little beach, you know, where they could pitch a few tents. Of course, by this time, it had taken about 3 months to get to this place, you know, on ice and then on the sea. They had very few rations. They were having a very hard time. Well, of course, they couldn't stay there. They had to go and find help. They couldn't just, there were no mobile phones. They couldn't, you know, nobody knew where they were. So here they were in, you know, this sea of ice. And so Ernest Shackleton, the leader of the expedition, the captain, he took a few people with him, and he said to the others, "I will come back to get you. Don't worry, I will come back." So he left. And through some very, very miraculous way, he actually made it to land, to a place where it was called South Georgia. It was a place where there was actually a whaling station, a Norwegian whaling station, where they knew that they could get help. And they passed this, I mean, the Pacific Ocean was, you know, very, very rough. They had to, huge waves, and somehow they made it. But they made it to a place where they had to cross a mountain range to actually get to this whaling station. So they landed on the wrong beach. So they had to, you know, take all their equipment and go over this, like, you know, very high mountains to actually. But finally, they got the whaling station, and they got help. And you know, when they walked in there, you know, because they had been there before, but people didn't recognize them. They were so, you know, frostbitten and starved and all that. In any case, they got help, they got, you know, ship. In the meantime, the men are waiting, you know, and 1 week went by, 2 weeks went by, 1 month went by, you know, nothing. And every morning what they did is they packed their bags and they sat on the shore in case that he came that day. And so 2 months went by, and 3 months went by, and one day they saw a ship approaching, and they said, you know, they started burning, you know, their clothes and everything, so they would signal. Well, anyway, when the boat came close enough, because it was very rough, the sea was very, very rough, made a few attempts, finally got there, and sure enough, it was their captain, it was Ernest Shackleton. And he didn't even come on shore because it was so dangerous. He was so anxious to get his people off. And they all went on the boats and they were saved. And not one person was lost on that expedition out of I don't know how many. There was a big crew. And his main concern was that not one person would be lost, and not one was lost. And today, you know, there are books written about, you know, this man, Ernest Shackleton, and films being made. But he did promise them that he would come back, and he did come back for them. So the same with us, you know. Jesus, of course, he promised that he would come back how many years now ago? Almost 2,000 years ago, right? But he did promise that he would, and he will come back. We can be sure of that. Do you know how many promises are in the Bible about Jesus' second coming? I didn't know. I looked it up. Somebody actually counted it. Apparently, there are 1,500 prophecies of Jesus' second coming recorded in the Bible. And for every prophecy about his first coming, and there are many of those, there are 8 predicting his second coming. So, you know, Jesus came the first time. He came for sure, because, you know, it's recorded in history. So for every promise of that, there are 8 promises that he would come back again the second time. So we can be sure that he will come back again. So why is he coming back? What does the text here say? John 14, verse 1 to 3. Why is he coming back? Is he coming back to punish people? Is he coming back to teach people a lesson? To show off his glory? Why is he coming back?
To collect his people.
That's right. He's coming back to take his people home, right? I like it, the way he puts it here. In my Father's house are many mansions. You know, there are many houses in his Father's home. He says, "I know, and I'm going to prepare a place for you." You know, in the Middle East, when they had a wedding, what would happen was that, you know, the couple would get engaged, and then the groom, he would go home and he would actually build a house for his bride or a room. You know, he would make an extension on his father's house. And then when he was all ready, then he would go and get her, right? They would get married, there would be a big wedding, and then he would get her to live with him, right, in his father's house. And the same, you know, Jesus will come back to collect his bride from earth. And we are Jesus' bride. And what is our, what should we be doing while we're waiting for the bride to come back? What do brides do while they're waiting for the wedding? They prepare, that's right, they get ready. They get ready everything they need to have for the wedding. Okay, so he is coming back to collect his bride. Do you think Jesus loves his bride? You think he longs to be with her? Yes, very much. And, you know, again, if you use this analogy of, you know, the bride and the groom, I know when Daniel and I were courting, I was in Romania and he was in England, so we were separated. And They didn't have budget airlines back then, so it was expensive to fly. And also, phones were quite expensive. So we didn't call much at all. In fact, the one time he called, I was like, "Oh no, something happened." I was so alarmed. And for me to call him, I had to go to the post office to make a phone call. We didn't have email, so that tells you how long ago we got married.
Dinosaurs
In
have roamed.
fact, yeah, that was when the dinosaurs were roaming the earth. But I was the first private email customer in my town of 70,000 people, so you can imagine. I was so eager to have an email account, so I went to these people. I said, "Can I please have one?" "Oh," they said, "you're the first." "Oh, good." "They just give it to me." They gave me a modem. And so what we did is we corresponded by old-fashioned letter, right? When did you last write a handwritten letter? So we would write like pages and pages, right? And we would write every day. Now, it takes a while to write a letter, right? It's like an hour or two. So we would write every day. But then there was a delay of about 1 week for the letters to come. So, I would respond to the letter that came, that he had written a week ago. So it wasn't very efficient, And, to spend, 1 or 2 hours writing. Of course, it was very good for us because we got to know each other and we wrote about all sorts of things. And then he decided he was going to publish a newsletter for me. It was called Monkey News. Because he thought he sort of called me like I was his little endearment to me. He called me, I was his little monkey, right? He made this little song about the monkeys, anyway. And so he would send me a newsletter, which he sort of laid out. It was called Monkey News and all the different things he did in the week and what happened in his town. And yeah, so we lived up on the second floor where we lived, and the post box was quite a way, so I'll go so many times a day to check the post box. I'll go and look, and I could see sort of from a certain distance, there was a letter there or not. He always wrote in a brown envelope. I'd go and look, and then if it wasn't there, I'd be sad and go up. After, half an hour, go up again, come down again and look if there was a brown envelope. And oh yeah, it's a brown envelope, run down, get it, start reading it. Do you think we wanted to be together? Oh yes. We were longing to be together, and he was too. And after about a year, we got married because it was just too painful to be apart. It was just too inefficient. So, yeah. And about my modem, he actually proposed to me on the phone. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and I had decided to go to bed early that night. And then there was a sudden thunderstorm. It had to be dramatic, right? So there's a thunderstorm and like lightning and a lot of rain. It was actually flood predicted in my town. And so 11 o'clock, the phone rings and it's lightning. And I was like, "Will you marry me?" I just woken up and there's like thunders and flashes outside. He's in a post box somewhere on an island near England. And not a post box. A phone box, I mean. And I was so shocked. I just said, "Yes, I guess." So he still teases me about that. He says, "Yeah, you said yes, I guess." Anyway, but then the time came and we got together. And that's the way Jesus wants to be together with us. And we should be longing to be together with Jesus, It's the thing that we're waiting for, to be together with the one we love and the one that loves us. Now let's look about when Jesus will come. Let's read Matthew 24, verse 35 to 37. Matthew 24, verse 35 to 37.
Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, nor not any angels of heaven, but my Father only.
Right. So, first of all, he says, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words will not. So even heaven and earth can be gone, but his promise that he will come back, that he will come back will stand. But then what does he say about when he's going to come? When is this, does the Bible tell us when Jesus will come back? No, we don't know. Will he come in 100 years? We don't know. Will he come in a month, 2 years, 5 years? We don't know for sure. And whatever anybody may tell you, I know that Jesus will come in 2 years. We don't know. Or if somebody tells you actually a date, I remember there was a preacher not too long ago, and maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and there was this group in America, and he had the exact day, it was in May sometime, that they said that he would come. Did Jesus come? No, he didn't come. And there were so many times that have been set, but of course they have passed, Jesus did not come. And then what did some people say? Well, to sort of save face. Well, since he didn't come then, maybe he came spiritually, He came sort of in a non-physical form, or, it was the beginning of air of peace, or, something else. But the Bible tells us clearly that nobody knows when he will come. But does the Bible tell us approximately when he will come? Does it tell us, does this give us some sort of circumstances that can show us that his coming is near? Yeah. Most definitely. And the chapter that we're on, chapter 24, is all about that. It gives us different signs about when Jesus will come. Let's read for verse 32 to 33 in chapter 24. Verse 32 to 33.
Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that the summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door.
That's right. So I don't know how many of us have fig trees in their garden. I definitely don't, but we have other trees. We have apple trees and pear trees and so on. Now, when you see, right, let's say that, you have no other way of knowing when summer is coming. You only had a tree, and you look at it outside. Now, when you see that it starts, right, it's winter, and there's nothing on it right now. And then you see that the little buds are coming out, the leaves. You say, oh, something is happening. Then you see that the flowers are coming out. Then you know that spring is definitely on its way. Well, the same it is with Jesus coming. There are certain signs in the world that tell us that his coming is near. Now, let's look at some signs. Let's start with, verse 3. Verse 3 and then verse 6 to 8. Maybe Nena can read that.
Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?
Okay, so let me stop you there. So, Jesus had just been telling the disciples about the destruction of the temple and of Jerusalem. So for the disciples, that was the end of the world. They just couldn't imagine that anything could happen worse than the temple being destroyed and Jerusalem being destroyed. So they're asking two questions, but in their mind it's just one. They're thinking, One is the temple being destroyed and the end of the world will come. But they're actually two different questions. And so Jesus is answering both questions in this chapter. All right, so let's read verse 6 to 8 then, Nenad.
And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be
famines,
pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. Mm. All these are the beginning of sorrow.
All right, so what is Jesus telling us? What is he giving here as some signs? What is the first thing he's talking about?
Wars
and rumors of wars. Now, have there been wars in this world? Right, since when? When did the war start? When the world started, right? The first children born on this earth, you know, were warring against each other, Cain and Abel, right? Cain killed Abel. That was the first war. The first world war. So it was just them. So, of course, wars have always existed. And rumors of wars. Of course, as time has passed, the wars have become more serious. Until, you know, in the last century, in the 20th century, you had the First World War, where, you know, a lot of nations were involved. Many, many casualties, many people died in the First World War. One of the bloodiest wars in history. Then, of course, you had Second World War. And then, you know, they just keep going, and we have war today. There are places, you know, in today that are with this continuous war. You know, if you think of the Middle East and different Asian countries, African countries. Now, notice also that it says that for nations shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. So not only kingdoms, as in, you know, countries will go against each other, but also a nation against nation. You know, there are places where there are more than one ethnic group living in one country. And, you know, there's more strife and more bitterness and, you know, that people are hating each other. And I think after this last election in the United States, you can see how that is sort of coming more to the foreground. Because at least in America, I've never heard, you know, people in such high places talking openly about hatred and, you know, sort of stigmatizing one group of people, you know, oh, these are these people, these are that people, they're bad people. And I don't know if you saw, there was this very disturbing video on Facebook. I saw it on Facebook. Well, it was from a very well-respected journal in the United States, and it was showing this video of some convention in Washington D.C. And there were you would think that, you know, there were Nazis that are having a meeting there. You know, they were having the Nazi salute, and it was very, very disturbing. You know, talking about, you know, that this one race should dominate over another race. That's, here we are. You know, how can we have this, you know, after what happened in the last century? People still talk like that. Of course, in Europe, it's not any better, because, you know, Germany, France, Hungary, Austria, there's a lot of nationalism on the rise, where they say, we want to have our country back, we don't want all these outsiders, you know, we want to, you know, we want to regain our heritage. And, you know, then of course there was Brexit in England, you know, that stirred up a lot of, or it was the outcome maybe of a lot of anti-foreigner feeling. So yeah, That's exactly what the Bible says, you know, nation will rise against nation. Now, it also talks here about famines, but before that, I have here, Jonathan very kindly put some figures here in your notes. And, you know, in the 18th century, there were 18 million casualties, so people that died in wars. Well, in the 19th century, there were 45 million. The 20th century, 200 million. So you see, you know, a steady rise of more, you know, people that die in wars. Famines. A famine is when you don't have food, right? And people die because they don't have food. That's a famine. Are there famines today? You think with all the food that's being thrown away, you know, here under our noses, there won't be famines anywhere. There sure are famines still. And there are a lot of people that are dying of famines. Apparently about 1 billion of people don't have enough food to eat. And about 16,000 children a day are suffering of hunger, dying of starvation. Right, so it talks about famines, pestilence, that means epidemics, you know, where people die of disease. Are there any of those? Oh, yes. You know, there was, of course, Ebola and SARS and chicken flu and pig flu, and, you know, they just keep coming. Marburg disease and Nile fever and all sorts of, and there people are scared of what the next big one will be, you know. And in fact, we have a game at home. I don't know, it must be inspired by somebody. It's called Pandemic. My children love it. And it's like a board game, and you sort of figure out, they have cards, and they figure out how to sort of take teams of doctors around the world to deal with, you know, pestilence, you know, with a pandemic. And then the grade goes up, and, you know, the different things you can do. So, you know, it is a threat. It is a real threat. I was telling the other group last week about MRSA, I think it's called. It's this multi-resistant bacteria that they resist antibiotics. So because of the overuse of antibiotics, especially in the animal industry, bacteria have become resistant. So, you know, in the 19th century, people died of, if you got pneumonia or tuberculosis or an ear infection or something, if you were a child, you died. You know, if you were an adult, you know, you wanted to have two grown children, you know, so that children that would reach adulthood, you'd have to have three or four children because one or two would die or more. So that was the reality back then. Well, because antibiotics have been used too much, like penicillin and all these, bacteria have developed resistance against antibiotics. So then you get this multi-resistant bacteria, they give you penicillin, it won't do anything, it doesn't do any good. So they have to try to give you harder, you know, antibiotics. Or in the end, they can't give you anything, you die. Apparently, in Denmark, right now, they think there are about 12,000 people that have this. And what happens is, you know, you don't know when it's going to come back again. So once you get it, you're not, you know, cured indefinitely, you know, you're susceptible. And so it is a big problem. And apparently, in Denmark at least, it was because they use a lot of antibiotics in the pig industry. So, you know, they got, and of course, there's a big pig industry in Denmark, and it transferred from the pigs to humans. And so, of course, we were close to Denmark here. They actually brought cases from Denmark to treat them in Malmo because, yeah. In any case, that is one of the pestilences that people fear. Then you have earthquakes. Have you heard of earthquakes recently? It seems like every week there's an earthquake. I mean, there was just one in Japan this last week. I mean, you sort of lose count of them. And then before that it was Italy, and they're just, you know, before you hear like maybe one a year, like a big one. But now they're like every month or every week. So apparently out of the 20 deadliest quakes in history, 12 were in the 20th century, and 4 were in the 21st century. Well, that's 16 out of 20 happened in the last 2 centuries, right? So do you think that they're coming closer? Yes, they are. Of course, there was the big tsunami that hit a few years ago in Asia. Of course, there was the big earthquake and then tsunami in Haiti and then Japan. We sort of lose count of them. There were so many. But what does it say here in verse 8? They're the beginning of sorrows. In other words, this is not the end. You know, these things have happened. They will happen with greater intensity. You know? Do you have children? I don't know. You do? All right. Okay, so you may relate to this then. When you are pregnant, right? And then the labor is coming, right? In the beginning, the pain is just, you know, once every half an hour. And then it's once every 20 minutes, then it's once every 50 minutes, and then the closer together they are, you know that the baby's on the way. That when it's once every 10 minutes, you better be on the way to hospital. If you plan to give birth in the hospital, you better be on your way, because otherwise you may get there too late. Right? And then when they're every 5 minutes, then it's imminent. Right? And it's the same with, you know, the signs we see. They have always happened. There have been wars, there have been earthquakes, there have been famines. But when they start happening, you know, in close sequence, then you know that something is imminent, something big. All right, let's read about something else then. Verse 11 and 12.
Many false prophets shall rise and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold.
All right. So verse 11 talks about false prophets, right? Have there been false prophets? Oh yes, there have been lots of false prophets. People claiming that they are the Messiah, that they are Jesus. There's a whole list here that Jonathan has put down on your outline. And they keep coming, you know, people that say, I am the promised one, I'm Jesus. Or I'm the prophet, you know, sent by God. And by the way, if somebody today on earth says, I'm Jesus, I've come to the earth, is that Jesus? I mean, is there any chance that can be Jesus? No. There's zero chance that that's Jesus. Why? Because when Jesus comes, he's going to come on the clouds of heaven. He's not going to be on earth, you know, hiding somewhere in Patagonia or whatever. So we can be absolutely sure that that's not Jesus. All right? Then it says in verse 12, and because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. So it's very interesting because today there's a lot of talk about love, right? We never talk more about love, and there's love in the air, love everywhere, and you know, Valentine's Day and all that. But do people really love each other that much, you think? I mean, some people still love each other, but, you know? Do you guys have Facebook? Are you on Facebook? Right. I'm on Facebook. You have lots of friends? Right. How many friends do you have on Facebook? I don't know. I'm not really sure, but I don't know, maybe 500 or 300. I haven't really checked. How many of those are actually like really friends, as in, you know, friends? I definitely don't have 300, I can tell you that. You know, somebody who'd, you know, sort of if something happened to them, would call you in the middle of the night and tell you, or somebody that you can call in the middle of the night to tell them something happened to you. How many of those do you have? Right, yes. So I feel that, you know, somehow there's been, I think the social media, it has helped in some ways, but in other ways it has not helped, because I think friendship is not, you need personal contact to be really friends, you know. And when I think a lot of people are losing the art of talking to each other, you know, you sort of sit with someone. I find this particularly distressing. You're talking to someone and they just take out their mobile, right? And they sort of like, hello, I'm talking to you. And they're like texting to someone. I think that's very disturbing, you know. Or you know, there's like 2 seconds of silence, you know, and people just can't take it, you know. They just start fumbling around in the pocket, you know, out come things, and you know, everybody's, why can't we talk anymore, you know? We should be talking to each other, encouraging each other and sharing, and, you know. I remember my dad telling me about the sort of parties they used to have. Of course, they were kind of nice parties they didn't have, that they met at church. And they just, you know, had all these games. I mean, they were sort of very simple games. And they would laugh their heads off. You know, they were really laughing that they'd be crying, you know. I don't know, we have, I think, lost a little bit of that warmth of friendship and of you know, getting together and fellowship and sort of where you sort of do anything for your friend. Also, you know, there's so much talk about, you know, we should have equal marriage rights and this and the other. Do you know how many marriages survive in Sweden out of 100? Do you know what the divorce rate is? Let me ask you that. Just have a guess. 59. So out of 100 marriages, 59 end in divorce. And they're actually, Sweden used to be the number one. It's not anymore. They keep sort of the other countries going up and down. But yes, definitely, you know, love is not the way it should be. Let's read 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 to 4. 2 Timothy 3, verse 1 to 4. No, do you have it?
But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power.
Right.
And from such people turn away.
Right. So he's saying that these things shall happen in the last days. Notice that it says, this also know that in the last days perilous times shall come. Paris as in dangerous times. You think danger, you know, it can be war or something. But then he's talking about how people are. Right? He's talking about how people will be. I'm sure that, you know, people were bad in his time, there were bad people in his time, but he's saying that it will be even more so in the last times, in the last days. Lovers of their own selves, covetous, disobedient to parents, unthankful. You know, we just had Thanksgiving. I mean, they celebrated in America, right? And then the next day they have, what do they have the next day? Friday.
Black Friday.
Black Friday. And people, you know, in the shops, like, clamoring for things, you know. You know, that doesn't really tell you how thankful they are for what they already have, because they want to have more. Right. It says, without natural affection, incontinent, meaning, you know, they can't, you know, have control of their own passions. You know, I don't want to talk too much about the moral decay today because it gets me depressed, but, you know, I saw this book, right? It was published by Oxford Press, right, which is one of the most prestigious printing houses, academic printing houses in the world, right? Oxford Press. And it was written by a bunch of feminist scholars, or these women scholars, you know, professors and so on. And they're not even talking about the end of marriage, but about how marriage was such a bad thing in the first place, and how, you know, you should have these other sort of different kind of very weird arrangements of, you know, yeah, anyway. So, you know, when you talk about, when you hear people in those circles talking about how polygamy is really good, and how, you know, having sort of polyamorous relationships is such a good idea, you wonder, you know, where is it going to end? Sorry?
What's polygamy?
Polygamy is when one person is married to several people. Usually a man married to several women, but it can be the other way around. So that's not becoming so weird anymore, you know. People are sort of warming up to the idea. You know, I mean, if you can marry somebody of the opposite sex, of the same sex, then why can't you marry several people? You know, what's the difference between gender and number? You know, I mean. So, also it talks about lovers of pleasures, you know. Pleasure has become sort of the main thing today, you know, whether it's food or, you know, fashion or luxury or, you know, sexual pleasures. That has become sort of the main thing that people are after and that are advertising and talking about. All right. What other signs, we need to hurry up now a bit. What other signs do we find here? Let's read Acts chapter 1, verse 9 to 11. Actually, we are sort of shifting into how will he come? In what way will he come? So Acts 1, verse 9 to 11.
And when he had spoken these things, wherever he held, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight. And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel, which also said, Ye men of Galilee, why stand ye gazing up into heaven? This same Jesus who is taken up from you into heaven shall so come in like manner as ye have seen him go into heaven.
Right. So the disciples see Jesus being taken up to heaven, right? He goes up on a cloud. And then the angels say to the disciples, he's going to come back the same way. He's going to come down on a cloud. So, did they see him when he went up? Yeah, they saw him. Will we see him when he comes back? Yes. It's not going to be some spiritual sort of nebulous thing, you know, he's come spiritually or he's, it's a new age of peace. It's not like that. That's not what, it's very clear here. It says, this same Jesus, which is taken up from you and into heaven, shall so come in like manner. In other words, the same way. He's going to come the same way back. All right. Let's read Revelation 1 verse 7. You know, will it be visible? Revelation 1 verse 7.
It says, "Behold, he comes with clouds, and every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him, and all kindreds of the earth shall wail because of him." Even so.
Right. So, he says again, he comes with clouds, and who shall see him? Every eye. That means everybody. Everybody who has an eye or two. Every eye shall see him. So it's everybody will know about it. You don't have to find out about it on the news, or it's going to be such a spectacular event that nobody will miss it. That's why I think that I don't think people will get to Mars before Jesus comes. Because it says every eye shall see him, right?
Yeah, but they can be in Mars and see him come. Because it's a very visible thing.
Right, well, I still think that they'll be here to see him. Okay, how about, is it going to be audible? Can we be able to hear it? 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 to 17. 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 to 17.
For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so we will be with the Lord forever.
Right. I joke with Elliot because, you know, he plays the trumpet, you know, and he says, in my Bible it says, with the trump of God. This is not Donald Trump, this is the trump of God. That's good too. And also, if Elliot plays the trumpet in the house, if he's practicing somewhere, there's no chance of me sleeping or, you know, anything like that. I'm going to hear it. Last night we were practicing and he was sort of making a few mistakes. I said, Elliot, why are you making mistakes? He said, well, I'm not playing as loud as I should be because it's such a small room. I said, well, play how you should be. And he played as it should have been. It was so loud, the loud was going like that, you know. So when it says here that he, with the trump of God, with the voice of the archangel, do you think it will be loud? Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah. You'll hear it, no? You'll be in any doubt that Jesus is coming, right? And it also says that the graves will open, you know, people will be resurrected. You know, it's going to be a very obvious sort of event. Let's read Matthew 25. In fact, can you hear a trumpet now? Matthew 25, verse 31. Matthew 25, verse 31.
When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory.
Right. It talks about he will send his angels with the great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together all the people that Jesus is taking with him to heaven. Do you think it's going to be a glorious event? Absolutely. Let's read now, and this is an answer to the question, why has Jesus not come back yet? Right? Let's read 2 Peter 3, verse 3 to 4. Okay, who? Daniel, you haven't read yet.
Knowing this fast, that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lusts, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation.
Right, so people say, you know, Jesus hasn't come yet, nothing has happened, you know, things just continue as they are. Now let's read the answer, verse 9 to 12.
The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but his long suffering to us, one, not willing that any should perish, but shall all, but that all should come to repentance. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with ferment heat, the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversations and godliness?
Verse 12.
Looking for and hastening unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat.
Right, so why has Jesus not come yet? Because he wants as many as possible to be saved, it says here. It's not slack, but it's long-suffering, not willing that any should perish, but all should come to repentance. Then verse 12, it says, looking for and hastening unto the coming of the day. So we look forward, but we don't only look forward. We can actually hasten the coming. We can have it come sooner. How? By us being ready. Right? Jesus, you know, looks at us and he thinks, I want these people to be ready. He looks at you. He looks at you, Nuno. He looks at Selva. He looks at Ninad and Daniel and Frida and I. And he says, are they ready? I don't want to lose them. I want to spend eternity with them. Maybe I should stay a bit longer. Maybe time should go a bit on so that they'll be ready, so that I can take them home as well.
It's not right that the others have to wait because of me.
Right, that's right. And let's end with this verse, which is Matthew 24, verse 14. And we said that there are all these signs that happen, but this is a sign that will happen just before Jesus comes. So we know when this sign is fulfilled, then his coming is very near. And it says, and this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. So that is the last time, when the gospel is going to all the nations, because God has waited that all, as many people as possible, will know and have a chance to make a decision for him. Then he will come. And this, is the gospel going to all the nations today? Yes, there are not only missionaries that are going, but also through different media that can be watched anywhere, you know, television and internet. You know, if you have internet access, if you have television, you can watch, you can read and find out about the gospel anywhere almost. And I hope anywhere you are in the world. So that is the last sign. You know, there's many other signs that we can talk about, but I think, you know, Jesus coming is near. When we look at all these things, I think Jesus coming is very near. The way we can hasten it is by us being ready for his coming. What an exciting day that will be when Jesus comes. That will be when, you know, the desire of ages will be fulfilled. And when we look up to heaven and we see Jesus coming on the clouds of heaven. And, you know, we think, oh, you know, it's so far away, you know, when will it ever happen, you know. But then, you know, like you're looking for Christmas, but then Christmas comes. You know, you open your presents that's the same it will be. Finally, it will happen. And then you see Jesus coming, and then hopefully, you know, you'll be being translated to heaven. You're on the way up to heaven. You think, wow, is this really happening? I'm going up to heaven, you know, with my loved ones. And then, you know, it will be reality. It will be, and everything else will be the past. It will be history, like what we're doing today. So I'm looking forward to that day very much. And let's be ready. Let's prepare today.